Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. We talked before the news about Columbia, the country, now to Columbia, the university. The National Labor Relations Board ruled last week that graduate students who work as teaching assistants at private universities like Columbia are employees who are entitled to the right to unionize. Here to discuss the ruling and its implications is one of Columbia's student organizers, Paul Katz, a third-year grad student in Latin American history. Should have been with us for our last segment on Columbia, the country. And Julie Kushner, the Region 9A director of the United Auto Workers, which is organizing the teaching assistants. Julie, welcome to WNYC.
Thanks very much, Brian.
So do you consider yourself, Paul, both a grad student and an employee?
Oh, absolutely. There's no doubt in my mind that when I'm meeting with my advisor to talk about my own research, in that capacity I'm a student. But when I'm teaching a class of 15 undergraduates about a topic completely unrelated to my research, in that moment, I'm certainly doing work for the university.
And how do you think the right to unionize will affect your life as a grad student slash employee?
Well, I think the main impact will be to make it feel a little bit less precarious. You know, it's difficult to be in your late 20s, early 30s, committed to spending at least half a decade of your life at an institution, and to feel that you have no say over the conditions under which you work.
So, Julie, the NLRB ruled in 2004, if I've got my history right, that graduate students at Brown could not be considered employees because they, quote, are primarily students and have a primarily educational, not economic relationship with their university, unquote. So how did the board get past its own precedent in that respect to coming to this ruling?
Well, Brown was actually a reversal of an earlier ruling at NYU that said grad employees had the right to unionize under the protection and all the rights of the National Labor Relations Board. We always felt that Brown was bad law. It didn't cite any congressional record. It didn't have any basis in the statute to say that if you had a relationship, another primary relationship to an employer, you couldn't also be a worker. So this decision that was issued last week by the National Labor Relations Board, it very carefully documents both the law, the statute of the National Labor Relations Act, but also Supreme Court decisions that say there's nothing in the law that says you can't have a dual relationship to an employer. And so they carefully document it. They talk about the economic relationship of grad employees to the university. They talk about the fact that teaching classes, which so many of the graduate assistants do, that that is a very prime revenue producer for these universities, and that as such, they're very much involved in the economic activities of their employer.
And so what are your main grievances, Paul, the teaching assistants as a whole? Are there specific things that you want right now from the university that you feel you couldn't get without the benefit of a union?
Well, having conversations with people in departments across campus, including, I should add, many research assistants in the sciences, who are also going to be in our bargaining unit, it's clear that though we all have, you know, slightly different concerns, there are many that unite us. For one thing, many of us are concerned about the cost of health care. Adding dependents is extremely expensive. Our plans are very limited in the sense that they were designed for, you know, 19-year-old undergraduates. So I think that's a concern for a lot of us. Lack of dental and vision coverage, lack of a formal grievance process, lack of protection against sexual harassment and assault. All of these are things that are very hard to address when we are acting individually, but when we come together to organize, we can get the administration to move on our priorities.
Julie, our other guest here is from the United Auto Workers. Are you going to be members of the UAW now, grad students in the United Auto Workers?
Yeah, and we're very excited to be. Certainly there's this sense that the administration of Columbia and of many universities would like to inculcate that the UAW is some kind of outside third party. But in fact, the UAW, as Julie can certainly elaborate on, has a very long history of organizing white-collar workers and organizing workers in universities, including Local 2110 at Columbia, which has been on campus for, you know, more than three decades.
Julie, that's true, because some listeners may be wondering, God, there are professors' unions out there in the world, or people in other kinds of unions that are more associated with the kind of professional class, if that's the right term to use. United Auto Workers, really?
Well, actually, actually, Columbia said the same thing in the 1980s when we were organizing the support staff at the university. And in fact, they say that anytime workers organize, why the United Auto Workers? The UAW has represented employees at universities for 50 years or more. And in particular, we've been involved with the academic workers for some time. In the early 1990s, we started organizing and helping the workers at the University of California, teaching and research assistants, to form their union with the UAW. And from there, we moved to University of Massachusetts, Cal State, University of Washington, and most recently, University of Connecticut. We also represent the workers at NYU, the teaching and research assistants. And so we have a long experience at the bargaining table with these universities. After organizing at NYU in 2000 and winning a first contract at a private university, we were asked by the adjunct faculty to help them form their union, and we were successful in negotiating a great contract for adjuncts at NYU and also soon after that at the New School. So this activity in higher education is longstanding within the UAW. When people look for a union, they want a strong union, a democratic union, and a union that has a track record of taking on the big employers and winning. And so it's a natural fit.
So if you're representing research assistants in the sciences and et cetera, in addition to actual auto workers at auto plants, is the United Auto Workers a misnomer for the union at this point? Should you call yourselves like the General Union of America and we'll organize you wherever you are if you are ready to organize, or is it not that?
A little bit smoother off the tongue might be the Union of All Workers, because, in fact, that has been suggested by many. At one time, we talked about all the A workers, the authors, the attorneys, the auto workers. And so I think the UAW has a very rich history for protecting workers' rights and for aggressively fighting for a better society. And so, you know, it's a wonderful fit, and we're very proud to represent the grad employees. We're incredibly excited. I'm at a conference, which is why I'm not with you today, but of our leadership from all over the Northeast, and there have been rousing applause every time we talk about this wonderful victory for graduate employees.
So listeners, any grad students out there want to call in? Grad students who are also TAs or RAs, 212-433-WNYC, or any university administrators from any college or university who wants to weigh in on this, you know, from the supportive side or from the other side? Does this change your relationship with graduate students to the university in ways that you think are constructive or destructive? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692 for Paul Katz, a third-year grad student at Columbia in Latin American history and an organizer of the move to unionize that the NLRB, the National Labor Relations Board, has just approved, and Julie Kushner, the regional director for the United Auto Workers. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Paul, I see a reaction or a quote from the president of Columbia University, Lee Bollinger, in the Columbia student newspaper, The Spectator, saying, "I think when you say you're my employee, I think that's different from when you say you're my student." And I guess the implication is that this will change the relationship between professors and grad students in ways that might be harmful. Do you understand the concern, at least?
Well, to be honest, to me, it seems like a slightly cynical argument. I mean, you know, grad students have been unionized at dozens of public universities for decades now. It's not as if this is just a shot in the dark. We have no idea what could happen. In fact, there is a rich historical record, and there is academic study, and all of it has found that there is really no negative impact on the relationship between students and their advisors. And in fact, the American Association of University Professors, which is the trade group for professors and one of the leading defenders of academic freedom in this country, actually submitted an amicus brief in our case before the NLRB, arguing that this is likely to improve academic freedom and academic relationships.
Why would that be?
Well, because as it stands, graduate students have no protection whatsoever. You know, our entire entire lives are basically contingent on just, you know, one relationship. And anytime we have a logistical problem, anytime we have an issue with the administration, we have to go basically begging our advisors to take their own time to solve it. That's not constructive for anyone.
Ken in Manhattan wants to bring adjuncts into this. Hi, Ken, you're on WNYC.
No, you said it. Are there any moves afoot to organize them?
And, Julie, you did mention a previous UAW organizing of adjuncts. So what's the status of that generally, would you say? Because, oh, boy, is that an issue in America.
Absolutely. And we started organizing adjuncts at NYU in 2002. And since then, we've had several contract renewals, and we have good, strong contracts there representing adjunct faculty. One of the things that shocked me when we were talking about the victory and the success at the bargaining table for the TAs at NYU, one of the adjuncts spoke up and said, you know, we are the lowest paid people at NYU. At that time, they were earning about $2,700 for a course, a college-level course, many of them holding PhDs, many of the adjuncts. And so we started organizing adjuncts and found that there was so much room to improve the wages, to improve the benefits, health care, you know, 401ks, things that they hadn't had in the past. And so there has been organizing with the UAW. We've been very active, NYU New School. And most recently, we organized the Tandon School of Engineering, the new division of NYU. And we're in contract negotiations right now as we speak at Barnard College for the contingent faculty. And so there's much to be gained from adjunct faculty, from organizing. And, you know, UAW has a good record standing up for these workers at the bargaining table and winning great contracts.
And I think we have one of your UAW member NYU adjunct professors calling in right now. Carolyn Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi, Brian. I'm a big fan.
Thank you.
I'm an adjunct professor, PhD at NYU for many years, and I come from a union family. My father was a crane operator, so he was in the International Union of Operating Engineers. So I was brought up as a union kid. Nevertheless, I would come out of my class, and there would be this guy looking like a truck driver or something waiting for me to try to talk to me about joining the union. And it was a very disconcerting experience. Just as what you said, it seems strange for it to be the United Auto Workers trying to unionize us. And I was very ambivalent and confused about it, although I was pro-union. And the consequence is, I have been teaching at NYU for a long time, since I got my doctorate, and never got a penny increase in salary. We got very little money. And once we were unionized, I now get three times as much in salary, and I have an annuity and, you know, lots of other benefits. So it was really a good experience for us.
Carol,
I'm so glad to hear that, because that's what we've worked for all these years.
Yeah, no, it's true.
Carol, thank you very much. Being a teaching assistant or research assistant seems like a pretty good deal, especially at a place like Columbia. This is not to say in any way that you shouldn't unionize or bargain for your rights for working conditions or anything else. But if you're getting your tuition covered, which is like $40,000 a year, and you're getting a stipend, which I guess depending on the department would also be tens of thousands of dollars a year, you're in a way, you're getting paid a lot more than adjunct professors.
There's no doubt that in many ways we are better off than some of the adjunct professors just in terms of compensation. But that's a problem that certainly needs to be addressed, jointly. But it's a distinct problem. I will say, though, I think if you're attempting to convince, let's say, a 30-year-old who is making $28,000 a year that they, you know, have it too good here in New York City, I think you're going to have a pretty hard
time.
Right.
No, not too good. I'm not using it as an argument against union, but honestly, I was in the position myself once. When I was in my early 30s, I was a graduate assistant at Columbia for a year, and boy, was I happy to have free tuition and a bit of a stipend.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose there are different ways to look at it. One way that I would think about it is that graduate school is basically the first stage in an academic career. There's no way to be a professor, to enter this academic world and not go to graduate school. So as long as the first, you know, 5, 6, 7 years of your graduate experience or your academic trajectory essentially require you to take a vow of poverty, I think we're going to continue to see the same kind of exclusions from the academy that have characterized it for so long.
So do you think there's a larger conversation to be had here about what it takes to gain access to higher education at the graduate level?
Oh, I absolutely do. I mean, take my own experience. I recognize that I am tremendously privileged. In addition to being at an institution with a lot of prestige, I am white. I am from a middle-class family background. Both of my parents went to college. I have a very robust support network personally. And I don't think that those things should be prerequisites for going to graduate school. It shouldn't be an irrational choice unless you're incredibly privileged. And I think, unfortunately, that's sort of the way it is now.
I think we have a grad student at Columbia here with some reservations. Kate, you're on WNYC. Hi, Kate.
Oh, hi. Thank you so much for having me on, and congratulations to Paul. It was good seeing you the other day. And I don't know if I would catch my comment as a reservation. Perhaps I wasn't clear before, but I wanted to talk a little bit more about this argument that the union is going to ruin the academic relationship with your advisor.
Oh, you want to respond to that. I thought you had concerns like that yourself, but go ahead.
Yeah. So here's the thing. Most workers, when they hear what their boss is saying and don't want to do it, they're risking their livelihood. But like they'll get fired, right, if they don't do what they're going to say.
Yeah.
When we don't do what our advisor or what our boss tells us to do, we also risk an inferior assessment of our academic performance, which could, you know, it could kill our career, like, henceforth. If your advisor decides they don't like you because you didn't finish the photocopies on time, you know, there's not a whole lot of nothing right now without a union that you can do about that, right? So there's a level of exploitation in there when you marry academics and work, and that we're hoping, at least I'm hoping, a union can set up a Chinese wall between the increasing administrative professionalization of the university and its pedagogical purposes, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's just my take.
Do any of the three of you, the two students here and Julie from the UAW, fear that the bargaining power of a grad student union will result in universities admitting even fewer grad students into already extremely competitive programs because each one is going to cost them more?
Well, Brian, I think these universities have tremendous resources, vast resources, and we have not seen any serious impact on enrollment in graduate school. I think two points I want to make. First of all, in terms of the kind of stipends people have in the universities, I think the union has largely been responsible for seeing a huge increase in stipends since the NYU contract was negotiated at the beginning of the century, where we saw stipends go immediately from $12,500 a year to, over the life of that first agreement, to $18,000, to today, where most of them are closer to $30,000 a year. And for, as Paul said, if you're trying to pay the rent, if you're trying to get a doctor, if you're trying to pay for childcare, you know, you need to have the livelihood that you can do these things and have the security that you need to be a graduate student and involved in your academic pursuits. But the issue that Kate just brought up, I think, is equally important. We have seen instances where someone's academic work could be jeopardized because of something that's happening in the work relationship. And having a union grievance procedure to address those problems is a really huge, huge advantage. So recently at the University of Connecticut, where we have a contract, we had a research assistant who was a victim of sexual harassment on the job, in her job as a research assistant. And through the grievance procedure, we were able to address this with the university, get her the protection she needed, and get a resolution where she was able to continue working and also continue her academic studies.
Different from any other student, because campuses are trying to take sexual harassment seriously in general these days.
Absolutely. It's a very large issue on our campuses, and this was the case where a principal investigator was sexually harassing his research assistant.
So just to wrap this up, does this ruling from the NLRB mean that any private university in the country Can now, if graduate students decide to organize a union, if they're also employees, they can do that. We're just talking about Columbia because it's the students at Columbia who brought the case, Paul?
Yes, indeed. But it's the national implications of this decision that are so exciting for us.
And this is now the law of the land. Once the board rules in a case like this, it's a global ruling. It impacts any other university with similar circumstances. We already have a petition filed that we expect to go forward for the New School University grad employees. And we're organizing at Harvard University, and we're doing very well there. Expect to file a petition there this semester, as well as announcing today that we're starting at Boston College. The organizing is going forward with the grad employees. And I know, just because you're going to hear this when you get off the line, that the grad employees at Yale University filed a petition with their union, Unite Here, for an election with the NLRB. They just filed that today.
So they're going to use Unite Here, which is, I guess, grew out of the needle trades. And Columbia's with the United Auto Workers. So there's going to be one big, of course, unionization. Well, let's make this the last question, Julie. In all seriousness, unionization of the private sector has so been on the run in the United States for decades and decades now. Does this contribute in any meaningful way to a broader revival?
Oh, absolutely. There's no question that the excitement about organizing and, frankly, the interest that this organizing at Columbia and NYU and Harvard is getting from the media, it's really getting the idea of unionization out there. And I think it's an inspiration to all workers that you can take on these giant institutions and you can win.
And just for the many listeners who may be affiliated with public universities in some way, Paul, this doesn't apply to them?
No, unfortunately, they are governed by state law. But many have already been organized for decades, and hopefully the ranks will only continue to grow.
All right. Paul Katz, a third-year grad student in Latin American history at Columbia, and Julie Kushner, the regional director of the United Auto Workers, on the ruling by the NLRB that graduate student employees, mostly teaching assistants and research assistants at private universities, can now unionize. Thank you both very much for coming on with us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, I think we're going to have a great conversation with Bob Litwin and Gerald Marzorati on aging, mastery, and tennis. Stay with us.